Which is the Pentop North, the smaller room up there.
Sink.
We're also 1 hour late. And the main change we're making there is the telephone pioneer talk is going to move to 10 p.m. instead of 8 p.m. And the reason why we did that was it lets us use that whole space for the social engineering panel. All right? So I apologize if that's confusing. Grab me if I walk by and you want me to repeat anything. And we're trying to get the word out about the schedule. Also like to apologize to the fellow I cut off at the end. We were just over time and I needed to try to help us stay on schedule because that's probably the only way we can effectively get from room to room. So apologize to everyone involved. All right. So are we set to go?
Is this live?
Yeah.
Oh, okay. We're good. You can hear me? Everyone hear me?
All right.
Okay.
So
you can still hear me? Hello? Oh, yeah. Maybe a little higher. Hello?
All right, let's go ahead and jump into the next talk.
Okay.
So if I start speaking, I'll adjust the volume as we go.
Okay, maybe a little higher. How about now? Can you hear me now? Hello? Hello? Testing? Can you hear me?
Only when you talk at it.
Okay. let me hold on to it then. Okay, where are we? Hello? Sorry. Okay. Okay, sorry. Testing. Yeah, can you hear me? It works? Okay, we're good. How about that?
Yeah,
okay. Hello?
Just talk.
Yeah, okay.
Put it back on your shirt and give the talk and don't figure it out.
Okay, all right. What slide is it? Sorry, 1 second.
Content slide.
Okay, contents. Sorry, my notes are a lot of sync. I didn't actually get the entire memory talk from earlier. Yeah. Okay. My name is Jimmy Shai. I work with McAfee Antivirus. I work in the mobile division. Let me get to my slides here. The talk's going to be on the state of mobile rootkits and botnets and pretty much things that we're seeing that are actually out in the wild, not just the theoretical things. This is proof of concepts, actual infectors, viruses, pretty much everything. I'm sorry, my notes are on one screen and the screen's in a different location. Right, okay, still overview? Okay. It's going. I'm about one slide down. Could you tell me what this one is?
Who we are.
Okay, thank you. So I work with a team of researchers who work at mobile devices like mobile phones, PDAs, pretty much anything mobile, whatnot, we deal with it. And we also work with a lot of mobile network operators, you know, carriers, things like that. Okay, first section is basically mobile malware. And this is a slide, a pie chart, right? Is that what we're looking at?
Next slide.
Okay, I'm sorry. It's not going down. Very sorry. Is that the pie chart?
In the wild.
That's the pie chart. Okay, yeah. Do I have my... Let me see if I have the laser pointer. Somewhere around here. Sorry. That's right. They said go this way, right? Right, so that would have been better that way. Sorry about that. We good? Hello?
Use the mic on the stand.
Yeah, it's like, I can't actually see the slides. I'm sorry, it's a specific slide I'm looking for. So this is actually a rundown of pretty much all the mobile malware we've seen in the last 4 or 5 years. Where is that, the laser? Okay, this big section here is basically Symbian malware for the Series 60 and second edition and third edition. Series 60 is the one made, or most of the Nokia phones in the last maybe 3 to 8 years or whatever, 8 to 6 years. And the Series 60 third edition is like the newer version that has more security and whatnot. Essentially, this layout where you see most of it's Symbian and the rest is Java and Windows and so forth, that actually matches the layout of smartwares sales worldwide in general, pretty much. I mean, this is what we've seen. What's been affected with... Hello. Right, so other platforms like Android and iPhone, they haven't had as many sales as your Java phones, your Symbian phones, and your Windows phones. Well, not really Windows phones, but most of these phones in general, so you won't see as much malware on that chart. But that's pretty much real samples we've seen in the wild that we've gotten from customers, we've gotten from actual locations, things we've actually looked at and actually played with, taken apart, turn apart, you know, detect. That didn't change, did it?
Nope.
Right. Okay, this next slide here, hold on a second. Let me sync up with that. Yeah, my notes are actually separate from the slides in here from the slides on the screen. One second here.
Slide eight.
Sorry, okay, so yeah, this is a chart basically of our comparison of malware between PCs and mobile devices, mobile phones. So what you're looking at, basically we have got Trojans, we've got viruses, we've got, what's the other one? Yeah, spyware. Pretty much everything you see on a PC, you see on a mobile phone. We've got examples of all of those things. We're not really going to be talking about any of those. That's the bulk of what we've seen out there, real stuff. We will be talking about what's possible with mobile rootkits, mobile... can't actually see my notes, but hold on a second here. Move on to the next part. I think this is it says mobile trends. Is that right? Oh, crap, that's right, one more. Trends, right? Ah, yes, good. Good, then we're going to write the section. Ah, yeah. Okay, this is the thing with arrows and pictures and whatnot? Yeah, okay. All right, this is the life cycle of mobile malware. Anytime it hits a new platform, it goes through a sort of certain cycle. There's the R&D cycle where skilled researchers and malware authors and other people who know what they're doing figure out ways to make newer and newer proof of concepts. They learn the platform, basically. They learn the APIs. They learn what's possible. They learn what they can get away with. All these things. That's the R&D section. From there, it generally goes to a section where you have the reuse section. You notice all the bugs look alike over there? Yeah, that's basically the script kiddie cycle. That stage in the cycle where somebody's come up with something like 2980 or one of those other virus zines, someone's come out with some kind of major example, and other people say, oh, let's take the source code that they provided and let's go change a few variable names, change a few strings, and you get like basically a dozen variants of the exact same thing. And then after you've got after the original writer is the one who actually do the actual creation, once they've gotten used to it, what they do is then say, okay, now let's make some money from this. And that would be the profit-taking section. This is roughly the cycle. You get used to a new platform, you learn what you can do with it, you learn how to avoid detection, whatnot, and you see how to make money from this thing. And that's not too common in mobile malware. I mean, the whole script kiddie section, that takes up a lot of those 700 variants at the beginning. That's a lot of copies and replacements and things of that nature. Okay, this would be definitions. Okay, I think I got it. Out of sync. This would be botnets. Thank you very much. Right, so botnets basically pretty much came from Unix. They were essentially away from an attacker. Once they've taken over your system, they say, what do we do next, right? How do we maintain root? How do we maintain super user access? How do we maintain administrator access? Same concept every time. It's basically a kit that lets you keep root. Where was it next? Right, so basically, what's rootkit for? It's for evasion, for detection, so that no one knows the attacker's there. I mean, you have rigged binaries, you have rigged scripts that'll hide logins and then'll not show that files have been modified, things like that. And right, so and also they reduce whatever security you would have had. So it basically makes sure you have a hole left in or a backdoor left in the system or on the system. And then also newer ones, especially on Windows or not, they do self-protection. They make sure that you can't remove them easily. So you're built in, you have a, sorry, what was I talking about? Rootkits. No. Am I telling you the right one? Botnets. It's one back. There we go. Botnets. I'm giving the wrong side again. Right. So it botnets are pretty straightforward. You got a client server kind of network thingy where the clients are, instead of being like your normal, okay, this is a proper sysadmin box and it has all clean software, you basically infect the system and say, okay, we've infected your system and these are all ours and they're controlled by the command server, the command and control server. Command and control can be either one server or it can be complicated. It can be like massively redundant servers. It can be tons of different things. And what's the other thing? And they're good for doing attacks against other targets, you know, denial of service, things like that. And depending on how complex you have them, right, they may even share many things with rootkits. You know, like if it's self-evasion protection, similar things like that. Speed and definitions again. Back to the rootkits. Okay, right. Once again, same thing that they use to get take control of the system and make sure that your system has been that you can still get back in again once you've broken in. That's what the attacker uses that for. Let's look at something else. Okay, it's really small. Right. First section: mobile rootkits. These are let's start with the precursors. All right. Yeah, okay, good. Okay, so this one, yes, Comware. Comware was a really complex malware written for Symbian Series 60 phones. It was written by a Russian fellow who goes by the handle Elodor. He released like new versions every 6 months or so. So A and B were like the first first two variants. The really only notable thing about them is that they tried to basically delete other malware that was existing at the time. Like, right, so you had like the Kabir worm or some other virus or whatnot on the device. You would say, okay, we know where those files are, let's go delete them. So it's one malware author attacking other malware authors. That was the first two versions. Then he changed it up in the next version C. He added more self-protection and evasion features, encryption, deleting files, a few other things. And then D, he stepped it all the way up and he said, now let's go attack antivirus itself. And that was, at the time, the most complex malware for Symbian phones. And it wasn't quite a, what's the command again? Sorry, I'm on rootkit. So it had almost everything you need for a rootkit except actually giving you more access, I guess, because since it was just a pure malware. But it provided all the other features, protection, evasion, all these things. Then we have InfoJack. Okay, InfoJack was almost the same thing for Windows mobile phones. So you have a complex malware that does a whole bunch of things to protect itself. It stored itself on the memory card so it can reinstall itself. It also did something really interesting, which it was alter the alter registry setting. It allowed you to silently install a application that was downloaded from a server. That server actually wasn't active by the time we got the samples, so they shut down whatever the command and control server was, so we never actually got the attack to work itself on the phone. But it was the same kind of thing, so first on Symbian, a precursor to rootkits, and then on Windows Mobile, a precursor to a proper rootkit. Okay, this should be actual rootkits. Yes? This is a picture of a Linux device inside there. Okay, that's an OpenMoco device. These are Linux phones with that run Linux, and they're like, they give you an API to basically say, okay, if you want to make phone calls, you want to do whatever you want, design your own phone or whatnot, that's what the OpenMoco device was. So recently, a team at Rutgers, this is Bigford et al., they put together a bunch of four loadable kernel modules for Linux. That did a bunch of, hold on, sorry, I got my notes here. They performed a bunch of attacks. So the reason they went with OpenMoco over, say, some other kind of Linux device or another phone was because they had, I think, about 45 of them or something lying around. They said, okay, we got to do something with these things. Literally, that's what they said. We have to do something with these things. And they decided, okay, we're going to see, right, Linux, loadable kernel modules, because kernel mode evades user detection, so they said, let's try this out. And because you might have seen on other phones that in user mode you can listen to phone calls, listen to the, send SMS, things like that in user mode. They said people in the future will be trying to attack actual phones with kernel mode code so that you can avoid antivirus or rootkit detection or minimal detection. That was an actual product or actual set of four things they released at a conference. So that's basically, instead of the previous like ComWarrior, previous InfoJack, any of the other 700 malware there, this is something created by actual security researchers at Rutgers University. That's a real rootkit. But of course, a rootkit doesn't actually get you on the system necessarily. This assumes that you're actually, that you've gotten some way, you have an exploit, you have some vulnerability you found, and you found some way to get yourself on the device, other than simply having the user install it on the device, which is the social engineering attack, but it's pretty much what Trojan horses do. You know, it's not overly complicated. It's a lot more difficult to do this than, say, I don't know, something else. But it's a common attack, and it's used often. This is botnets. Okay. Sorry. Okay. There we go. That one. Okay. All right, so this is another one. This is a so-called future attack. Right, so future mobile rootkits will probably do something like this, where they update the entire OS itself or replace the bootloader. This is a valid product, of course. It's written by an iPhone dev team developing, the guys who work on jailbreaks and working on developing apps for them unofficially. It's replaced the whole whatever you had there before. You have now a bootloader that will dual boot between Android and the iPhone OS, or the jailbroken iPhone OS. And so, I mean, this is what the new future attacks will be looking like. Instead of saying, okay, we're going to just install a few software or install this or have the people install something, you'll instead flash the whole thing, flash the entire phone with something else entirely. Excuse me. Okay. Sorry. All right. Rootkits. This should be botnets. Okay. This is a slide of OS X. I think IPH Pony.
Yep. Yeah.
Right. Okay. This was done by a software developer. I think it was in Sweden, named Nicholas Serio. He decided. Okay, so we have people who write malware, they need jailbroken phones, they need a lot of different things. This thing doesn't require a jailbroken phone because all it does is use legitimate Apple-approved APIs, meaning you could get into the App Store. I mean, that's what it was for. He said, okay, we can use these things and I can still get a whole bunch of information off your phone. What can you get? You can get basically stuff you have in Safari and YouTube, like previously visited links, bookmarks, not sure what passwords. And best of all, the keyboard cache. The keyboard cache on an iPhone, some of you have iPhones. It has an onboard keyboard. The keyboard cache basically is a cache of every character and every word, everything you've typed on that phone. Passwords, et cetera. You get the concept, right? It's all the text you ever type on the on-screen keyboard into whatever box, whatever secure box, password box you think you're typing in. It's all in there. It's like a whole bunch of text. You grab that for a bunch of words or whatnot, or just grab to and look through. And you'll run into pretty much everything. And that's done from an app that doesn't require a jailbroken phone, doesn't require anything else. All it needs is that you install it on there. Once again, this guy is just a regular developer. He didn't actually release this app, but he did present at, I think, Black Hat DC. Was it in February? A few months ago. It was initially for a user group thing. He said, okay, let me show a couple of my local user group and see, look at this app. And I got a bunch of coverage. And then they invited him, he got accepted at the Black Hat DC, and he came and he showed it off a little bit more. That's still a precursor because it never actually hit the App Store. He never actually submitted it into the store and said, okay, we're going to put this into the store and say everyone can use this. No, he didn't do that. Next one. This is a picture of Rick Astley. Yeah, okay. Is anyone familiar with the iKey worm? A few people. Okay, let me run through the whole storyline there. So jailbroken iPhones, they let you have access to the phone occasionally, depending on how you installed or jailbroke the phone and installed additional software on there, third-party software. You might have installed the SSH daemon on there so that you could, like, SSH into your phone and say, I can copy files over, copy files back, do whatever you want on the phone, right? On a jailbroken phone. So a lot of the vulnerability here is that all these phones have the same root password. I mean, so it's not actually the jailbreaking that caused the vulnerability. The phones always had that same root password. It's just now you have access to it because you have the SSH daemon installed on the phone. So you log in with root and boom, you've got access. So a few months before this version C of this iKeyWorm and the downloader and so forth, before this, there was another guy, he was in the Netherlands, and this teenager basically said, okay, all these jailbroken phones have the same root password. What if I log into them, SSH into them, like because apparently the network in the Netherlands is accessible, I think it was T-Mobile's network, you could actually go from any device and log into any other device on the network. So if you had a jailbroken iPhone and you had SSH just enabled on your phone, and of course you knew the root password, which is common knowledge, but I'm going to mention it, Google. If you have all those three things, you can log in and do whatever you want on the phone because you have root. What he did was the initial guy, he put up he changed the background image. So when you hit end call or whatever, or hit the power button and whatever that thing is that comes up there, the background image. Okay, wallpaper. It has I forgot the actual name of the file, but yeah, whatever your wallpaper is, he changed it out for a warning sign that said, okay, send me €5 and I'll tell you how to secure your phone because it's open to hackers now. I'm like, okay, you could change your password, of course, but not everyone knows that you can change your password on the iPhone. Even if you have jailbroken and you have SSH, that doesn't mean you knew what you were doing when you put it in there. It could have been done automatically. There are packages that do that for you. So he put this out there, and he tried to get away or collect €5 from everyone in the Netherlands or whatnot who had a jailbroken iPhone. And then the authorities got caught up with him, and then he had to change his tune, and they put up a link to his website instead, saying, go to visit this link, and then it'll give you some kind of safe change password. The whole point is that brought to the forefront that jailbroken iPhones have an accessible, they have the same root password unless you change it, right? So somebody decided, the author of the iKeyWorm, the A and B versions, not this one. He also released the source code to that for about one or two days. I forget the exact time window there. So he had no hand in writing the version C. Version A and B, all they did was replace the background with Rick Astley and iKey will never give you up, right? So that went through what's it doing? It's on the network, it's on your mobile phone. He was scanning, the worm scans the network for devices that have SSH on them and tries to log into them, because they'll probably be jailbroken iPhones. So it goes through there, switches out the background image and moves on to another phone. And just keeps going, scanning and going. That's A and B. And C is a little slightly modified version. One thing, let me check my notes here. Okay, yeah. This is the one that did a little bit more. This is the actual so-called iPhone botnet version. Why it's in quotes is because, once again, a botnet is supposed to take commands from a command and control server or some kind of control period. You send commands to the thing, to the various clients, and they're supposed to do something for you. You know, denial service, spamming, whatever, giving me information. Okay, it does kind of try to take information. Okay, we forget exactly what it took, but because the actual sample doesn't actually work as is. They claim it did scan various devices, but what he did was modify the iKey A and B worm that it was actually scanning on its own, so that it sent out a package of files that was a script and a few other things to copy things on the phone and steal your SMS messages. A bunch of things to try to do, and it didn't actually do that. And the most interesting part was that it added a host file to your phone. A host file that had one entry that said, I think it was, I'm not going to mention the bank, it replaces the bank's, I guess it's mobile banking address with a server under control of the author. And so the other portion, the IPH downloader, that is the one that actually tries to download the separate second stage, the other shell code, whatever was on that other server. That server was a server in China in Japan. That was shut down, and it wasn't, I think they closed it down very, very quickly. So that never actually got anywhere, and there weren't any big losses from that host file replacement. It was basically a phishing attempt. You know, we change out the address, you come to our server, and you enter your login details, on your iPhone. You say, okay, yeah, this is a good site. It's a proper site for that bank. And they didn't quite get that far. But that was an actual, the closest we got to an actual widespread botnet on iPhones. Once again, jailbroken iPhones, and anyone with a regular an iPhone that's not jailbroken yet, you couldn't log in, you couldn't do half of the things this guy tried to do. So those are attempts on real phones. These are precursors to botnets on an iPhone. Okay. This is Symbian Worm. Okay. This is the, you might have heard in the news recently about a bunch of Symbian botnets or whatnot out of China. This is basically one in the same category. They all work very similarly. It's kind of interesting what they do. Let me get the notes. Right, sorry, they're really small. Okay, so this worm is on Symbian 3rd edition, Series 60 3rd edition. This is the latest version of the Nokia phones that have Symbian running on them. It was much more secure than Series 60 2nd edition, which was the one with Calm Warrior, which had all everyone infected. Kabir had worms, had all kinds of malware, right? Like hundreds of different things on Series 60 2nd edition. So they came up with a new version that was a lot more secure, had like permissions, had signed applications, had a bunch of different things. You could still install if you wanted on an unsigned application on a Symbian 3rd edition phone, but generally if it's signed, it was good. This was an app, this SexyView Worm, XMJTC. We call XMJTC named after the company name because it's signed, it's by the developer. That guy's probably a pretty bad guy, right? So regardless, it had a life certificate. It wasn't like you know, one of those expensive ones, you get all the verification ones. This was one of the cheaper ones that said, okay, yes, I'm probably pretty good. We haven't really checked it out. And even Symbian said, we haven't fully checked out this thing. It's sort of their minimal signed certificate thing, not the full one. What does it do again? Sorry. Right, okay, so other than sending out SMS to other people, like basically phishing other people, it wasn't really what you call a full botnet. I mean, if you for a real botnet, like on a PC where we have hundreds and thousands of hosts, I mean, sorry, 100,000 of clients or zombies, botnets, bots, whatever you want to call them, it was pretty targeted. I mean, you to install it has to be signed. So in general, it has to be signed. It was signed, it had a certificate, but that certificate can be revoked by Nokia Symbian whenever they see something bad. They can pull that. They pull the certificate. That's one thing that happened. The other thing is the command and control server was one server, so that server tended to die quickly, including the ones on other Symbian worms that you might have heard about or Symbian botnets recently. It's the same concept. They have one server. It's one attack. The only thing changes is the name of the developer, like, say, in there in that little window there in that picture, the name of the developer or the name of the company or whatever it is. He just changes the name. He gets a new certificate and says, oh, let's send it out again. That makes you have a target attack possibly. You're targeting a specific person. You're sending to a few dozen people you know. Even with the sending an SMS, you're sending people in the phone book. People they know. People who know you. It's more like you targeted, say, an executive in a company who has a Symbian phone or a Nokia phone, and you went after that one person and everyone they know, meaning executive staff, people who would probably be in their phone book. It's that kind of thing. But not a full-on botnet that you can use for other things. It's not distributed computing, which is basically what botnets are supposed to be, right? You know, we're not calculating things. We're not phishing other people or doing this large distributed denial of services or wasting a lot of money or whatnot. None of that. It's just a really targeted attack. Those are the closest to actual attacks, but it's still what I'd call a precursor? I'm sorry. What's the next picture here? Okay. So this should be the actual one then. And let me see what that is. Bad Monkey. Okay. Bad Monkey is an actual botnet. Okay, let me go back for a second. All those previous ones are written by malware authors, except for the iPhone spyware that was not actually released. Pretty much all of them are that. These actual ones, that actual botnets, are different ones created by computer security researchers. Oh, sorry. What's that previous line? Oh, Bad Monkey. Okay, you want to see the previous slide? Okay, sorry, thank you. I had my notes here and I've got that up there. Okay, right, so both of those, let me start with the Weatherfish first. Weatherfish was an app released on the Android market, so it's like, okay, it's a real map. It lets you go to the Weather Underground, the website, and check your weather for your area. It looks up your phone number, converts it to a zip code, and hey, it sends you to the page on Weather Underground, it tells you the weather in your local area. awesome tool, right? They had a whole bunch of downloads. This is a tool written by the two researchers at Tipping Point Digital Vaccine Labs. They do basically vulnerability research over there. So they said, okay, let's see if we can make it. Their reasoning behind it was, let's see if we can make a botnet app and send it out like a legitimate, disguised legitimate app and see what can happen. Right, so Weatherfish was the cleanest app. All it ever did was take your, I think, your phone number, do an MD5 hash and send it over to their server. They have no idea what it is, all they have is a hash. But it was basically a proof of concept saying they can do that. But they also made another version, Weatherfish Bad Monkey. This was never actually publicly released, but it is their more fancy, full-featured real botnet. Weatherfish Bad Monkey, that did a little bit more. What else did it grab? It actually took commands. They did it multi-platform on top of that, not just Android, also Android and iPhone. But since they were doing botnets, they didn't actually put it into the iPhone App Store or the Android market. They said, let's put it into alternative third-party markets like SlideMe on Android and Cydia on the iPhone. So you needed a jailbroken phone on the iPhone, and Android, you could install what you like if you've set a setting for third-party applications in your settings. So the Bad Monkey version, it grabs your... Sorry, what did it actually grab? It'll actually take commands like sending emails out to them, you know, spamming, performing distributed denial of service attacks, and best of all, the client on, I think, iPhones at least, to provide a reverse shell into the phone. So, you know, it's a nice thing. You've got, I'm going to go check the weather in New York or whatever. You know, what's the weather today, right? Boom, they own your phone and whatever else you've got on there. That was a kind of a thing. It was just a proof of concept to say it can be done. And it can be done, but not necessarily on anything that isn't on a stock phone yet. That's close to that. What can be done on a stock phone? This is the other one, right? The Eclipse Rootstrap? And Eclipse Strap? Okay, this is a proof of concept done by John Oberheide. He's at Cybersecurity now. He did research on how do I put together the pieces you need if you were trying to actually build your own botnet now and your own... take over a phone and maintain control of the thing and partially rootkitting it. This app was initially Rootstrap, was designed to like load on the phone. The original Rootstrap application is just a regular Android application, barely any GUI, that downloads files from his control server that says, okay, we have actual ARM binaries that you can run on the phone, meaning shellcode, exploits. He had one exploit for a bug that affected Android phones before they patched it, I think 90% of phones are patched, so it's not really effective, and he didn't actually release the code anywhere. But he built the thing so that it actually downloads code. You can, of course, update that code because it's a downloader. The key is, who's going to download some boring application that says Rootstrap? So he did some minimal covering up and said, let's turn it into an application, a game or something or whatever. He said, let's make it a Twilight Preview app. Right? It was right before the Eclipse came out, right? So he said, oh, okay, that'll get people downloading, right? You'll notice the second window is a bunch of comments. And it's basically the people who actually did download it, fans of the clips, I'm guessing, who said, this is a horrible app. It has like one or two pictures. You know like you grab, I'm pretty sure you grab it just from the trailer, the poster or something. Boom, here's your app. Go. He still got about 200 downloads. So, I mean, hey, it works. It's once again social engineering that actually targets the user instead of the system itself. And the point of that, this whole the experiment was to say, you can get portions of what your infrastructure for your botnet on the phone already. So you gain control of the phone. You have some trusted software that's on the phone, lets me install whatever I want on it. And it was in the market. I think Google asked him to pull the app. He pulled the app, and then they used their remote uninstall software. That's only for apps that are installed in the Android market to basically nuke the application, so you can't get any more. And if you had it installed, they took it off, which is nice. But I think it was a few days until he did the talk at, I forget, it was RSA, I believe. SummerCon, that's right. SummerCon, which was about a month or so ago, maybe a little less. That was here too, right, New York? Yeah. So really recently, right? Until then, nobody knew. 200 downloads, I mean, that's a lot of things. But of course, it wasn't a real target attack, and with phones, you can't really get the same range you can with a PC or Windows or whatnot. I mean, it's a thing like that. 1 second. I lost where I am here. Okay. Yeah, questions, comments. I pretty much all from my examples of whatnot, what can be done on the phone and what possibly could be done. Does anybody have any questions about any of these things or what's feasible?
Can you talk about mitigation for a little bit? I have, you know, executives that have phones that concern me.
Executives with phones? Okay, that's a good one. Are they using BlackBerries?
BlackBerries, iPhones, yes.
Okay, just in general mitigation? I mean, that's the thing. If you're using a smartphone like a BlackBerry or an iPhone or Android, two different things, BlackBerry has a lot of device controls. If I haven't covered any of the spyware that's been created for BlackBerries. Because it's really out of scope for this talk, but mitigation for BlackBerry, if you have BlackBerry Enterprise Server, you can have your IT department lock down the device and control a whole lot of different aspects of the device. You're not really going to face much trouble with BlackBerry, because you can really lock those things down. iPhone, mitigation, don't jailbreak it. I mean, really? there's not much you're going to be doing with a phone that needs to be jailbroken for the executive especially. But if they do, I can help you there. Android's a big market, and it depends. Don't download Eclipse apps. You know, don't download things that like that don't have enough reviews. I mean, similar things with markets. I mean, there's not the whole. It's sort of the thing like why do we need any protection at all? Why do we need things that protect us from anything? Because sometimes even good sense, it was right before the movie. How do we know it wasn't real? You know. Right before the movie. It came out, it's got to be a real app, right? I mean, some things you can't really do. It depends. I mean, other than, I'm not telling about products or anything, not talk about any of those. I mean, other than security software, it's mainly what you do with the phone or how you deal with the phone. Don't do dangerous things. Don't download software, don't download wares, don't download things to places you don't know where they came from, you don't know where the sources are. Yeah, just the same ones you do on a PC. Next.
You mentioned a lot of applications that almost got out or almost are, you know, in production and real stock OSs.
Almost in the wild or something similar like that?
Yeah. I'm familiar with Apple development just because, and they do a pretty thorough job of testing an app before it goes on the store.
Mm-hmm.
Have you done or have you seen analysis of apps that, or heard stories of apps that almost got there or been consulted about any of that work?
Yeah, I did a talk about that was it, sorry, GetCancer West about spyware and things on iPhone. Not necessarily botnets or rootkits, but spyware is like a big problem on the iPhone. There are a bunch of online games that they take more information from you than necessary. They take your phone number, they take your, is it 10?
15,
thank you. Sorry, different. They do different things. Sorry, on the iPhone. The online games and things like that, where you think you're getting something clean and they're taking personally identifiable information. In the US, maybe that's not such a big thing. Other places, that's important. You can't just take people's phone without their permission without telling them. That's actually gotten out there. Those have been there. There's a site, I forget what it's called exactly. I think it's iPhone Phone Home or something. Something similar to that. It's a blog and then it has a listing and then a host file that tells you avoid these apps or use this host file to make sure that the app doesn't phone home. Might be iPhone Phone Home. I forget the exact name of that place. But yeah. But actual rootkits and botnets, only what we've seen here or what I've presented here. There hasn't been anything that's gotten out there through the iPhone market app store process yet. But there could be many other privacy infringing applications out there. That's hard to detect.
Have you seen any attacks on MeeGo or MeeMo?
On the Linux for Nokia N900s.
Yes.
You remember the slide about the Rutgers University? That team is actually working on, or they're talking of porting all their work they pulled on the OpenMoko open platform towards the N900. There's even a distribution for the N900 for the Neopone sort of mobile backtrack software that has Aircrack, has a bunch of tools on it. That distribution, it was originally on an OpenMoko phone. They're now porting it to the N900 also, and I think they're about to release it sometime this month before DEF CON, possibly next week. At least that's what they're claiming. But they've done all the work to port the drivers over to, I'm assuming, the base, the actual MeeMo Linux. MeeGo is the combination of Linux Mobile and, I believe, MeeMo together. I forget which mobile Linux. There are actually quite a few mobile Linux groups. This is, I think, the Intel one. Yeah, the Intel one with Nokia's version of this whole mix. Moblin, okay. See, there are quite a few. There's Limo, there's Moblin, there's a ton of them, you know what I mean? And they keep changing names. But yeah, you said attacks on them, right? Here's the thing about the rootkits and whatnot, the bootstrap technique. John Oberheide mentioned that, yes, okay, we know there are a bunch of, by itself, it doesn't do anything by itself. You admit, it doesn't do anything by itself, but it's Linux. Obviously, there are privilege escalation exploits that they may not have been patched in the current kernel they're using on the phone, and he says mobile phones don't necessarily, mobile carriers and mobile manufacturers don't necessarily upgrade the kernel as often as, say, Red Hat or Ubuntu or Debian or anybody, any PC or server OS, right? They're not upgrading at the same time. I mean, at the same rate. So you have the potential for holes in them, and people could be doing it. But anyone who's actually targeting them, not really. It's actually, there aren't that many devices being sold in comparison to, say, your average iPhone. And they're selling millions of units of iPhones, an N900 or similar, not that many. Now, not in the same range. It's not their biggest money maker for Nokia. It's not the largest number of devices they're selling.
I was wondering about non-jailbroken iPhones, because mm-hmm. your talk seemed to imply that they were extremely secure, that sorry? Basically to attack them, you would have to go through Apple's App Store, and they'd probably pull you. But do you expect to see people finding more vulnerabilities?
Certain class of things aren't are secure in the App Store. That's the whole point of their API restrictions, to not allow you to access certain things like would allow you to put together a rootkit. No, probably not. Not to the App Store. But things like stealing information, like the keyboard cache, it's accessible from the public APIs, right? I mean, it has all your passwords in it. So, I mean, they can get to you still, but actual something that'll let them completely, totally own your phone? Not necessarily from the App Store. Unless you can find a vulnerability on the phone, which we've seen in the past, like attacking the I think it's the comm center on the iPhone, you can target that. Colin Molnar and Charlie Miller did that at DEF CON last year. Not sorry, Black Hat last year, where they fuzzed. Is it five? Sorry, how much time? Oh, sorry, thank you. Okay, right. So they fuzzed the bottom. They took different techniques of fuzzing the comm center to basically what they ended up with a bunch of vulnerabilities. I think one real one that did a DOS on the phone. But assuming you kept that up and not just did it just so you get bugs to show at a conference, because really they don't have all the time in the world. They have to bang for the buck, right, for a security researcher, right? But for a dedicated attacker who has time and hands, possibly they could find something. But that's completely theoretical. You know, it's not like a oh no, we're gonna die thing. No.
I had two questions. One of them was mm-hmm. in the slide you had where you guys were collecting a lot of malware that was on phones. Like, how do you generally find that? I mean, I feel like it's would be really not obvious that your phone would have malware on it.
Oh no, well yeah. See, that's why the Symbian's at large. It's mainly installable software. People see, okay, stuff's up. It's not quite, things aren't quite working. Something's running. Because the Symbian is actually a pretty good platform. It came originally from PalmTop's handles, you know, like the Scion series. That was the, it was the operating system for that. There was a community that said, okay, we have a bunch of tools to handle a computer. We have task managers. We have process viewers. Okay. They saw what was running. They saw things aren't working well. A lot of these initial software, things that weren't common, that weren't trying to evade detection, they showed up. So, I mean, okay. A lot of these ones, they show up. They weren't trying very hard. And the other ones, like Comware, he didn't just release in a while. He sent it to AV companies and whatnot, and he made sure right. people noticed okay. it. I mean, the guys are very good in that original mobile cycle and all that. They like people to know that they've done something, because they put okay. a lot of work into it. But the others, target attacks, like the Symbian one, the Chinese one, the Sexy Worm one, that looks a lot more targeted. It looks like they don't want anyone to know at all. That one would not have been caught unless it was submitted to people, meaning customers submitting right. anything. Something's very wrong with that phone. Take a look at it. That kind of thing.
Okay. And the other one was, mm-hmm. Is there any? I mean, being from McAfee, I guess you're probably the right person to ask. But is there any development towards, like antivirus type of host-based firewall? I mean, things like that for a phone.
That was another talk. It's possible to do it on the phones. We do things on the various platforms, like once again Symbian because it's the largest, Windows Mobile because also they had a bit of a high profile there. And then there are things like for the iPhone, which I don't think anyone has done for proper approved one from Apple for an iPhone, because they're not actually releasing the, forget rootkits, we don't have security APIs for that to allow us to do it without doing what it is. But yeah, I mean, there are products coming out all the time, and it's possible. I'm not really talking about them. Yeah.
Oh, I'm just wondering, since you work for McAfee, like how big the system is for the honeypots you run for the phones?
Ah. that comes under the thing that we don't actually talk about. I mean, if you know how big a honeypot is, no one looks for it. Yeah, no, we don't actually do the same kind of thing like that. Because with the mobile device, it's a little harder. A honeypot makes sense on PC because you have so much disk space, you have so much memory, you can just put out an entire dedicated entire machine to it, or VM or whatever. On their phone or even a user's phone. I mean, people already complain about antivirus on a PC. You want all that on your phone? I mean, all the AV companies are doing on mobile devices, they have to rewrite their stuff to work from the ground up on a limited use device. No one is saying, okay, we're going to take whatever we had on a PC and put it right on there. No one's saying that. Nah. Yeah.
Sorry, don't people put simulators for the phones in the IP space of the carrier and use them as honeypots?
Okay, you mean like a full simulator?
Yeah, there. I mean, the existing simulator that was written by the manufacturer,
like
you can
like
run
Android
it on
or something.
Non-mobile hardware.
Yeah, or something similar to that. I think there's a company that actually lets you handle the actual device, and here's what, really, there aren't that many actual manufactured type of simulators. A full emulator, not really a simulator, you mean, right?
And aren't there things like Little Snitch, for example, for the Mac, tells you when you're opening a connection to an unexpected location, some app is doing that. Mm-hmm. And, it would be nice to have that for the mobile platform, although the UI might be confusing.
Right, but I mean, something like that's running all the time to tell you what's going on.
It just has to trap outbound connections.
Right.
And when apps start phoning
but
home.
But I mean, as a separate product, I mean, it would be, they can account, what does it work with other products we have on the phone?
Do the carriers look for, since they control those networks, do they look for hygiene on the part of their clients, and when they see bot activity, they start telling people about it?
They monitor their network very closely, so they know when someone's doing something for attacks. And they're telcos, right?
Yeah.
They know what's going on in their network, but I don't think we ever received like a big warning, except for something like ComWare, which actually got released on the network, and so we know about that. But okay. But in general, they don't like to advertise that kind of thing. I mean, they're very close. Tie them close, they don't talk about those things outside of the telco about those things. I mean, the telco security department probably knows what's going on. Talk to some guy at Sprint at DEF CON, and they even knew what the hell was going on, they're not telling anyone else, And then they'll talk to people who've actually attacked the network, oh yeah, we talked to you, but they won't tell you someone's attacked the network and say, what do we do about this? Yeah.
As far as the honeypots, how about Android for x86? Have you played with that?
Android for x86 or Android for the, that's the port to x86, right?
Yes, there's a port to...
Or the QMU emulator that runs on various platforms, well, x86 mainly.
Both.
Two different things. One is is QMU running an ARM, so it is the phone pretty much running on a PC, so it's probably faster than the actual device. And the other one would be a port to AX86. I haven't seen that yet. I know I've heard of it, but I haven't actually looked close in depth at that. I think they're saying that for I think pads, actual Android pads, not actual phones, so not as much, and it does help. I mean, having emulators, we don't actually haven't had it before, like with Symbian. I think until maybe two, three years ago, we didn't actually have debuggers on the phone. Until then, there wasn't support for it. Then they had the Nokia purchased Code Warrior, and then they ported the debug stuff, and then we had actual debuggers on the phone. It was a lot of, you had to actually test on device and see what's it doing in a contained environment. You couldn't say, okay, let's just look what's on the phone, run GDB or something. You couldn't until recently, We didn't have the same tools that they had if you're manufacturing. Manufacturing wasn't interested in testing security because they had to get the product out the door. They can't do the same kind of fussing or whatnot on the product as they can on anything else. They don't have the same window. I mean, even T-Mobile, when they had the G1 first came out, I think they released a full patch. It took like 50 megabytes, like a 1 week. And then they had to do one the week after, so they did it over the air. I mean, just to patch a bug. I think it was Charlie Miller's bug, the one that did the browser bug. And so, I mean, it's not that easy for phone companies to do the same thing. It needs to be done pretty much from manufacturing. You have to put whatever you're going to put in when you build the device, and after that, it's iffy.
So I'm curious about two related things now that we've seen a lot on the PCs, which are... there's lots of man-in-the-middle attacks, spoofing of trusted sources, and at the same time web browser vulnerabilities. And I'm curious as to whether this type of thing could be an alternate method of installing malware on the phone, basically by bypassing the App Store altogether, either breaking part of the browser, which lets you execute arbitrary code, or
spoofing. That was actually done on iPhones earlier, and I think it was version 1 or 1 point something or whatever, one of the iOS versions. It might have been 2. I forget exactly what it is. The AppTab vulnerability, this was an image file. Can't remember the extension at the moment. There was a vulnerability in the library that handles the image file, and basically you visit the website in Safari and click the button, and boom, you're like, they loaded the jailbreak, and they loaded the files, and they loaded CD on there. So it's theoretically possible, but it's getting harder to do. If you follow the iPhone jailbreaking team and the dev team and the jailbreakers, they follow through and they look for vulnerabilities all the time, and they do find vulnerabilities that allow them to do the jailbreak. But it's not being exploited as common. The people who actually know enough to do that generally aren't writing exploits widespread. I mean, also because it's not as easy because the window's smaller. As soon as a jailbreaker is released a jailbreak, Apple's going to find out what went down and how do we patch that, and you have a new game start. So you could kind of do it, and it's technically possible, but we're not seeing it happen a lot. I mean, similar to the whole thing with the iPhone and last minute. We're not seeing it as much on the iPhone, because I mean the closest thing was that what happened in the Netherlands, and the iPhone IKEA RLC that attempts to break the jailbroken phones and whatnot, jailbroken phones, but nothing actually goes after a phone with say a known vulnerability, because they don't really last as long, and I'm guessing it would have to be a very targeted attack, not something you blast out there because you lose it. I mean it's hard to get it, and then it's even harder to say okay I'm going to use it. It take a lot more resources. I'm not seeing a widespread kind of PC level kind of thing happening there. Yeah. But it's feasible, yeah. Any more questions? No? Okay. Thank you very much.